Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Atlanta Business Radio, spotlighting the city's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Lee Cantor here with Stone Payton, another episode of Atlanta Business Radio, and this is going to be a special edition, isn't it, Stone?
Hey, I've been looking forward to this one for a while. It is our Women's Telehealth Special Edition. We're going to be talking about telemedicine, and we have with us from Women's Telehealth, Ms. Ann Patterson. She's MD, she's CEO, she's Grand Poobah. She's got a lot going on, and welcome to the show.
Thank you.
So you brought some bright, interested, passionate folks in this arena with you. Who'd you bring with you today?
With us is Turner Smith with Telehealth Solutions and Matt Jansen from Iron Bow. I've known both a long time. They both have been really instrumental in seeing that telehealth move forward, and so I'm delighted they're here with us.
Now, before we get into this too deeply, can we just define some terms? Like, can you explain telehealth? What does that exactly mean?
Well, it can mean many things, but as we see it, it is a very sophisticated world in which you can visualize, communicate with, and talk to and analyze a patient at a distance. And the equipment is so sophisticated today that you can actually listen to someone's heart with a stethoscope in your ears, and they can be in India and you can hear what their heart sounds like. So really what we're seeing today is not just calling up a doc and talking to them on the phone and getting a prescription. Mm-hmm. This is something that's very sophisticated, that where you can practice state-of-the-art medicine at a distance and provide really excellent care to patients that need it.
So now these patients, they can be anywhere, and maybe they're in an environment that doesn't have the most sophisticated equipment, but they, or the access to the most, the best and the brightest doctors. But they, as long as they have some level of equipment, then the best and the brightest doctor can care for them. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, but the equipment that has to be both on the receiving and the sending end has to be pretty sophisticated. Mm-hmm. But it does allow us to provide that kind of care in an area where it might not otherwise be available.
So they can make an investment in this technology and then get the care that they need. But if something were to occur, then they would have to go to physically to be with a doctor?
Telemedicine is really right for probably 85 to 90% of patients. Mm-hmm. There are definitely patients that need to be transported to a facility where they have immediate hands-on care. Sometimes when you're seeing a patient like that, you do recommend that and facilitate that happening. But in many situations, telehealth can bridge the gap and allow patients throughout the state to have care that otherwise might not be available mm-hmm. to them.
So now in those circumstances right now, if they don't have the technology, what are they doing for care?
A lot of times if there's not the technology there, if there's not telehealth available, I do obstetrics and gynecology, high-risk OB actually. It's called maternal fetal medicine. And sometimes in this state, we see patients traveling 7 to 8 counties to be seen. So you have a flavor of some of the hardships that Georgia has. We have 159 counties. There are 49 counties that have no obstetric care. That means no nurse midwife, no primary care physician, and no obstetrician gynecologist. There are 75 hospitals in the state that do obstetric care. 15 are in the metro area. That leaves 60 hospitals for the rest of the state to do delivery. So you can see that we need some help in other places, and that therefore this is a vehicle to provide that.
Now, where would this technology be if there aren't the physicians there in that locale? How would the patient get to this equipment?
Actually, all of the state health departments do have telehealth equipment. Mm-hmm. Not all are utilized in my specialty, but in various specialties. So that's available. Some hospitals have it. Certain ERs have it throughout the state. And then there are some doctor's offices as well as clinics that have it.
Now, is it something that everybody is on board, that they say, okay, this is something we need, and we got to find a way to fund this? Like, what's the holdup for getting it implemented?
Well, like any technology, and I think these gentlemen can speak to that maybe better than I, it always takes some adoption, because people have to be educated to see what it can do and realize the benefits that it is.
Now, is that because the patient isn't comfortable with it, or is it that there's not funds to put the equipment where it has to be?
I've not had patients who were uncomfortable with it. I, in fact, have had the opposite. I've had some really special cases where I think really demonstrate not only the sophistication where we've been able to do ultrasounds that have pinpointed a problem so that we then sent a patient for some very specialized surgery, and we could do this by telemedicine, make the diagnosis, send the images where they needed to be, and then get the patient within 24 hours to the place was outside of Georgia where she needed to have the surgery that saved her babies. So it can be very sophisticated equipment. Patients have taken to that quite easily.
Right.
It's just the overall adoption. People don't often realize what's available. They don't often embrace technology easily. So some of those things have been barriers.
All right. Turner, can you speak to that? Like from the adoption standpoint, why? Who are the people that aren't comfortable adopting this new technology?
I don't know that there's anybody that's not comfortable adopting the new technology. As Ann said, patients, I think, are very comfortable with technology. There's been a number of studies that have demonstrated that. Very frequently, what we've run into is that the technology, like any technology, when it is put into a clinical workflow, mm-hmm. unless adjustments are made in the clinical workflow, a lot of times the technology is not adopted. So the two big factors there to drive the technology adoption are, I think, a really comprehensive assessment of both the clinical workflow as well as the ease of use and the usability of the technology. Mm-hmm. Very frequently what we've seen is that, and I think that technology is improved leaps and bounds in the past few years, but that it was very difficult and very complicated to use so that it didn't previously fit well into the clinical workflow because, quite frankly, it was simply faster to write it down.
Right.
But as the improvements in the technology have gone forward, the equipment is much easier, much more intuitive, and that has led to an increased adoption. I think further, one of the things that we ran into very frequently, because the primary users a lot of times in the hospitals were not only the docs, but you frequently had nurses and nursing assistants using the equipment. And interestingly, another piece around the technology adoption is an assessment around the leadership and buy-in from nursing leadership, because very frequently the nursing leadership was of an older generation, because of their clinical expertise and the amount of time they'd spend in the field, and they were the experts and the leaders there, but they were frequently the ones that were least comfortable with new technology, where you get the nurses fresh out of nursing school. While they might not have the clinical acumen of the nurse leadership, they were far more comfortable with the right. technology. But there was very frequently kind of a disconnect there, and until you got the nurse leadership to buy in, the rest of the line nurses weren't able to use the equipment. So it's an important and two important pieces, I think, when deploying it to be able to use it effectively in any type of clinical setting.
And Matthew?
Yeah, so from the clinical side, you can see there are lots and lots of hurdles to overcome from a workflow standpoint, clinical
right.
application standpoint. On the back end, the network side, how to actually get the point-to-point connectivity, get it at a clinical grade with security in place so that not only is it taking place in real time, live, but all the telemetry equipment is at a clinical grade, FDA approved, has all of the clinical rigor you need to do what Dr. Patterson does from a distance, which is very unique stuff. When you're doing ultrasound from several hundred to several thousand miles away live, and you're seeing the images, they have to be just like you're sitting in the office. So making sure that that environment is taken care of is very much like the technology is way ahead of the healthcare industry. However, the clinical healthcare and the clinical technologies, like Tolliver said, was basically they're now merging. So you're seeing a merge and an adoption rate that's speeding up. And you're starting to see more virtual care environments across the specialty spectrum. So now I'm a primary care physician. Mm-hmm. I now have access to a Dr. Patterson. I now have access to a Dr. Smith, a psychiatrist or psychologist. I can now link my patients directly from my office to give a holistic provider, network around the different types of chronic illnesses that my patients suffer from. because it's not a single man sport anymore, or woman sport. it is not a single man sport anymore. So you have to work as a team on a patient.
Right.
80% of our healthcare is really managing chronic illnesses. And you can't do that with a singular approach. You really have to take a team effort. But the technology, the back-end network infrastructure, making sure that your routers and switches and computers can adhere to a clinical-grade environment has to be somewhat seamlessly done.
This is when Dr. Patterson is doing an ultrasound. It can't be like my Netflix buffering, right? Like, right. That's not acceptable. Right?
You know, it's not. And she wouldn't do it if it was, and neither would the patient.
But doesn't that require a certain level of infrastructure from, like, the network, or who controls that? The cable companies, or who handles the bandwidth issues?
Well, yeah. So when you're brokering a telemedicine network across, say, you know, regions where you have different service providers from an internet perspective, what you have to do is create a private system that is locked down, that's running off of some of those commercial lines.
But you're sharing those commercial lines, right?
Well, no, you want it dedicated and private. So that's why you have to work with companies that can securely lock down that network. So you're not just commercially at a commercial grade level, like going into your home where it does buffer and things like that. You have dedicated speeds, dedicated security. Now, you're going to use some of that same infrastructure. Don't get me wrong. You're still going to be running over some of the commercial lines. However, it's going to be monitored and maintained by a system integrator, like, say, an Ironbow or something like that, where we're monitoring the packet loss of that stethoscope when it's sending that digital heartbeat from one end of the state to the other.
Right, and the margin of error there is different than a movie, right?
Yeah, right, there's no margin
of
error.
You can't miss a couple of heartbeats. That's not acceptable.
Right, and that's why those devices have to be FDA approved clinically. You have to go through the clinical rigor and process, just like a stethoscope would in an office setting.
Right.
You know, same sort of situation.
And then what about the privacy issues? How do you combat that?
Well, it depends. Patient health information, HIPAA and the Health IT Act and some of the high-tech act that's going on out there. And, of course, with the ACA, some of the changes in our healthcare industry. It's going through an update right now, but you have to adhere to a very high level of security when it comes to patient health information. You've heard about the data breaches lately. That's a very hot topic in this industry. That's just from a patient health information standpoint. When you're doing a live ultrasound,
right? Can someone steal someone's ultrasound?
Well, that's why doing it right pays big dividends. Because if you do it wrong, you try to cut corners, and you try to think because it's the internet, it should be cheap or free. You can't do it that way. This is a clinical grade process. Don't cut corners.
Right.
Work with industry people who have done this, who have high levels of security, and will mitigate risk for you. If they're not willing to sign on the dotted line that if that goes down, or if an ultrasound isn't pushing through properly, if they're not willing to sign on as sharing risk with the providers, don't do it. Stay away from those folks. Run from those folks.
From my standpoint, it's very, very important that it not only be up all the time, but that you do have absolutely excellent quality, just like you were standing in the room with the patient doing the ultrasound.
Right. It should be seamless, right?
It should be seamless.
The same experience.
Plus, it also has to be extremely secure. I mean, it's not like Skype for medicine.
Right.
And I have to, sometimes I have to explain that to patients. No, you're on a dedicated T1 line. Nobody's going to interfere with this. No one's going to get this image.
Right. But you have to kind of explain, like, it is like Skype in how that we're going to use this, but it's better than Skype in the sense that it'll be more secure and it'll be faster and it'll be more reliable.
Yeah. I always like to think of it in three different ways. You have kind of a consumer grade level environment where you're like a Skype, you know, or FaceTime. And then you kind of have a business grade where you're looking at like a WebEx, but you're still running off of other people's servers and switches and hardware that you have no idea where it could be and who's managing what. And then you have a clinical grade where that's actually being monitored and managed by people who are in the healthcare industry.
Right.
And maybe even embedded in hospital. Some of that infrastructure will reside in hospitals, will reside in clinics. Will reside in other areas, but you want it managed and maintained in real time not kind of a 24-hour loop where we'll check on it. You know, it has to be, like Dr. Patterson said, up all the time at a very high clinical grade.
Mm-hmm.
So, and there are some very unique specifics behind a network infrastructure, and I don't want to get too boring but and geek out too much here, but there are some specifics to making that happen to keep the certifications on your network going,
mm-hmm.
and to meet the some of the security regulations, because if you don't, if there's a breach or if you're not meeting those security requirements, those companies are on the hook. I mean, they can be fined heavily for not, and so can the providers, mm-hmm. for joining those networks.
Has this been hard to sell, Matt? Are doctors embracing this? Like, I get the sense that you, Doc, really embraced it early and often, but do they, yeah, what's it been like to actually market this?
Yeah. So you're hearing a lot of, like, scary things, but but the thing is, that's our job. That's, our job is to make it on the back end seamless so that the physicians can focus on the clinical side. That will increase adoption. Right now, you kind of have what people would consider like a patchwork quilt mentality. They're trying to push this in and piece this together here and do it as go from pilot to production, right? So now you have Dr. Patterson, who may be a part of 4 or 5 different specialties now that are coming into remote hospitals.
Yeah.
And that is awesome. You talk about game changing. We're now seeing that is directly building, communities back up. When you now have access to high-level specialists in communities where you never had it before, that markets itself. When the families see that, the kids experience that, or a high-risk pregnancy actually takes place in your community as opposed to having to, bring a patient all the way to Atlanta from South Georgia. I mean, that's impossible.
Which is also only adding risk, right, Doc? I mean, you got this high-risk pregnancy. Now you're adding risk, taking her all over the place, right?
Well, and I think to mitigate that risk, to summarize what we've been talking about, is that it is incredibly important to do the due diligence on the front end, is when the system is built right so that you've had folks that know what they're doing, assess your needs, assess your equipment, optimize your network, that the technology works seamlessly. And what you get is incredibly simple as an end product, but it's very complex on the back end.
Right.
I think that it does sell itself because of its simplicity and the ability to extend care into rural areas and places there were not care before. But so many people look at it because they are familiar with things like Skype or FaceTime, and they think, oh, well, I can do this. But
right.
there's a lot more to it, and just because you can doesn't mean you should.
Sure.
And it is important to get experts to, as Matt said, to assess the network, maintain your network, do an assessment about what your needs are, and match the right equipment, right people, and right network to achieve what is very simple, which is having a doc be able to see somebody at distance.
Now, where are we at from an industry standpoint in the maturity of this? Are we at the, the beginning stages, or have we already... It sounds like technology is there in the right circumstances. I don't know if it's there just in a universal manner, but it can be there. That's what it sounds like.
Well, I speak from a different perspective than a clinician.
Right.
So the industry, of course, is, I feel, we've come out of the piloting experimentation.
Right. It's doable.
I can scale this thing all the way to China and back. I've been there, done that.
Right.
Macedonia recently, Georgia, Central and South America, connectivity, making sure that the infrastructure can be attainable there. It's doable. And from a clinical standpoint, it's a whole nother discussion. But yeah, I mean, I feel we're in an upswing.
Right, we're right on the cusp of this.
We're on
it, right?
I would characterize it as we're out of the startup phase, and we're into the early, out of the startup phase at this point. And I think that it builds momentum from here.
Because now it sounds from technology, we're okay. It sounds like doctors are embracing this as a way to practice medicine.
I think that we're still in the very early phases. I think some people do, some people don't.
Mm-hmm.
For me, it's been a real adjunct to provide high-risk obstetric care
right.
To places that didn't have it, and we've been very successful For instance, is we are in a health department in South Georgia, and in that particular area, we picked this particular clinic because the preterm delivery rate in the two different clinics that is embraced were 18 and 16%, and that's huge. That's far higher than it should be. The state average is 13, and we're like number 43 out of 50, which isn't a great number either. So these were higher than the right. usual state number. And we have been there with them within 18 months. We were able to drop the preterm delivery rate from those numbers to 8 and 6% respectively.
So that's dramatic.
That's dramatic.
And then, so talk about how when you took on that challenge, right? Because some people probably thought that was nuts, right?
Yes.
Right?
No question. So,
but they, I mean, you were trying to serve them and help them because that's kind of a crisis situation when it's 18%, right?
Correct.
So now going into that clinic and you said, hey, I got this newfangled device and it's going to work like this and we're going to try to improve those rates, right? And were they like, high fives, let's go? Or were they still like, well, we know what we got here, so, you know, I don't know about this?
Well, a couple of things. They were innovative. They had started doing something called centering pregnancy, which is a little bit different way to see patients and have them more connected with each other as well as the clinic. So they had just started that. They had a health director who was very interested in doing something innovative. And when I first went down and presented it to them, they said, you know, that might work. Let us just think about it. And they did. They thought about it. And within
did
a couple,
they think about it for a day, a week, or like a year?
No, a couple of weeks. And they called me back and said, you know, I think this would really work. Let's try it. And so we started trying to put pieces together that would work. And
so
we,
what's the first piece when you're trying to pilot something like this?
Well, first, the health departments are connected through a telehealth network that is run by the state.
Mm-hmm.
It is just for the health departments. And I'm on a different network. So
right.
the first step was, okay, you're on a telehealth network. I'm on a different one and bridging that. And we were able to do that. They had ultrasound. We actually did upgrade the ultrasound. And then they had equipment there.
So they had some equipment that yours, I'm sure, was better equipment, right?
Well, I wouldn't say it was better. It was just a little bit different.
Different.
And so we had to get that to work together. And once we did that, we sat down and worked out a clinical protocol of how we wanted to do this.
And you had to train the nurses that are in the...
We spent some time there. We actually sent our own ultrasonographer down. She still goes once a week mm-hmm. and scans. So we worked out a plan with them that worked for them and for us. And therefore, we were able to put it together.
And then talk us through that first patient when they said, what am I getting into here? You know, the regular doctor isn't here. You're going to be done with Dr. Patterson in Atlanta. And she's like, I'm not in Atlanta. You know, I'm 5 hours away.
I've had maybe one or two patients who've kind of looked a little surprised. But interestingly, young women who are pregnant have grown up in a technology
right,
generation.
Right, so this is no different than them talking to their friends.
So
right?
I have not really had any pushback. The patients have been amazing. It's just like you're there, and you connect with them very well because it seems like they're just talking to you, and you feel
right.
the same way, and so it flows quite easily.
Now, was that strange for you at first, getting used to that from your end because you're not as young as they are?
No, I didn't have any problems with that. So I've been in technology a long time, too.
So you were comfortable. So both sides are comfortable. The patient gets their treatment, and then you send them off. And so that started working pretty well right at go?
Yes. I mean, there was a flow that had been predetermined about different mm-hmm. things that we might see and how that would unfold.
When did you start getting an inkling that you were onto something in terms of that you were getting better results than they had previously been getting?
Well, it took a couple of months, but you began to see that the patients, there was not an attrition. The patients were not delivering, being sent out because there was a problem that they mm-hmm. were staying throughout their pregnancy before delivery. And you began to realize that things were definitely improving.
Right. And then so when did, now you said 18 months you've been doing this about?
The first data was taken at 18 months. We're now a little over 2 years, and it's been sustained.
And then so everybody is just over the moon happy with this, and now they're ready to roll out more, or where are we at?
Yes, I think there are other venues that are very interested because we've certainly been successful in this one.
Now, is this technology something that you have your OB stuff going on with it? And if somebody is a different type of physician, can they utilize the same infrastructure, or do they have to have their own private network to pull this off for their specialty?
Well, it depends. The same way that every different specialty has different specialty clinical tools,
right,
that
you have
they're
different
using
equipment
an application.
And stuff. Right.
As long as there is an electronic variant, very frequently that can be matched up. And then that is switched out specialty by specialty.
Right, like you can plug and play different equipment into the same kind of
into the same video and network infrastructure. And that
so you
changes.
Don't have to rebuild that every single time, right?
Absolutely. And that is part of that front-end assessment, is how are you going to use the equipment, ensuring that you've got bandwidth, but that you've got the available connections to mm-hmm. use the equipment that you need to use for the clinical application you want to use it for.
So now, how does it work once you build that infrastructure and you have all these specialists working off of that same thing? Like, I want to use it on Tuesday. I got a Tuesday and 10. How are we battling
that's
on
cool
that?
That's cool with Matt. I'll sell you too, right, Matt?
That's right.
Does that come into play?
Scheduling software.
Yeah. It's air traffic controlling at that point, right? So if you have a statewide network like you do here in Georgia, or you have a national network of specialists who are tapping into various sites, various clinics, you do have to have a very robust scheduling and protocol development, like what Dr. Patterson was talking about, in relation to those specialties and how they're going to be delivered or patients are going to be presented. And then, of course, from the patient health information side, how do you – and then from a payment perspective. So you go across the – there's a state to state, it's a little bit different when it comes to the rules around telemedicine as well. So you have some policy changes going on at the national level, and then each state – has their own medical board, and they're making decisions based on their knowledge. And so, like Dr. Panis said, this is a very much an educational process. I spend most of my time not talking about the database side of what we do, and more about kind of like a consultant. You know, this is who do we really need to work with within your organization to build these types of systems and protocols, and make sure that it can launch and get the wheels up. So that you can see patients and make dents in our health disparities in states like Georgia specifically. I've worked here for over 15 years now. We have health disparities in Georgia in line with developing nations in Africa, you know, in relation to diabetes and heart disease. We have to get our specialists, we have to integrate them into our local communities so that we can back up the local community infrastructure. You got to localize your infrastructure too. So your primary care docs within your local areas need to get connected with each other. And then you bring in global resources like a Dr. Patterson to really take it to another level. And now we can do this on a global scale, not just in Georgia, Alabama, Florida, but we can do this anywhere on the planet now.
So this happens in the studio all the time, but the job you two have didn't exist when you went to school, right? So, tell us a little bit about your career path. We'll start with you, Turner. How did you make your way to where you are now, man?
Surprisingly, I'm a psychologist by training.
Of course.
Got my start in community mental health and ended up shortly thereafter in hospital operations. In 07 and 08, when the economy was dropping and I was charged with cutting pieces of our spend on our P&L, and we were looking to onboard any new business we can, we stumbled upon telemedicine and started deploying systems into our contracted hospitals. And ironically, back then I was buying video monitors from Walmart and computer carts off the internet, had them lashed together with bungee cords, and I kid you not, I had a bicycle lock around them so our equipment didn't walk away in the ER. And the technology and products are very much self-contained at this point, and you don't have to kind of build your own. But got an early start in it, and it was a great way for us to leverage our assessment unit at that point, which was manned 24/7, to be able to do assessments without having to deploy clinicians into each and every one of the remote contract hospitals we had. From there, I ended up with a products company that was building telemedicine products, and have finally landed in a consulting role to work with organizations around product choice, optimization of network and product, and matching that with their clinical needs and clinical workflow to ensure a good marriage between the clinical results and the technology on the back end. Because there's a lot, as you know, we've pointed out, there's a lot that goes into it.
Now, it seems to me that this solves the problem, like you guys were discussing, of giving access to underserved areas. Is that the primary driver for most states? Is that the first hurdle that they're trying to use this for, is to serve all of their constituents?
Well, I think it could be any of that. It could be more than that. Certainly, one of the goals is to be able to provide health care to people who not had the opportunity to have that same level
right.
or same type of health care. That would be absolutely wonderful, but it can be used in an urban setting as well.
And it's going to bring costs down, right? If it's not already, it's going to bring.
That's the idea.
Is that accurate?
Well, that's accurate, because that's how I got into this too, is actually Tolliver Health, we set up the first school-based telehealth clinic in our state.
Oh, yeah?
Where we were bringing access to a rural area, rural community, where we didn't have access to specialists. We had one general practitioner. No specialty care access within 60-mile round trip, you know, I mean, or a one-way trip. So we needed that. And so, you know, we researched with Emory, with some of these others that have been doing, you know, research around how to do remote clinical or just do clinical services on a school campus. That was stage one. Getting some of the legal language, you know, matched up was a hurdle, let alone the technology. You know, then we brought in, you know, certain technologies into that environment. Then we had to train our school nurses. So we kept kids out of the local ER for unnecessary reasons.
Right.
And we could focus on those who really needed, you know, emergent care. And we kept costs down. We saved a local community hospital several hundreds of thousands of dollars in 1 year. Just in pulmonary issues, just in kids with asthma. Because now they had access to a pulmonologist here in Atlanta, keeping their medications regulated. It's simple touches like that that go a very long way, but even in an urban setting, it's very similar. You might be able to throw a rock and hit Grady, doesn't mean you're going to get access to the specialist within Grady,
mm-hmm.
you know, in a very efficient way. So we have to come up with different models, and I feel this is a component to that. This is part of that change, that systems change model that we've been looking for in healthcare for a long time.
Well, and to piggyback some of on what Matt was saying too, especially with school-based clinics and school models. In the county where it was rolled out, the educational system, the school board was actually the largest employer in the county, if I recall right. Mm-hmm. And with the primary care physicians so far away, most of the parents of the kids that were attending school there were hourly wage earners. So that if the kid got sick in the middle of the day and mom or dad had to come home from work, not only was the family losing income, but then there was a 120-mile round-trip commute to get the kid
right.
seen by a pediatrician, which is gas money and time as well. If the kid is out of school for an extended period of time, that's a further drag on the family's income. And by implementing the school-based clinic, the kid was able to be seen by a pediatrician while they were still in the school. There was a MOU with a local pharmacy so that there were the prescription was bubble wrapped and delivered to the school, and the school nurse could have a first dose on board by the time the parents picked the kid up at 4 o'clock in the afternoon.
Right, which is game changer. Because like you said, I mean, forget about the missing an hour or two. These hourly workers could get fired for missing a half a day.
Absolutely.
And that impacts their family well beyond it. So a lot of times they're probably not even taking their kid to the doctor because it's too much of a financial risk for the family.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Even though I do really specialized care, when you hear about these sorts of stories and you see what they've done when I've seen this presented, let me just tell you how awesome it truly is to see how families have been so positively impacted and kids have been impacted in the school system, all because of using a technology that connected medicine to the patient in a superb way. I mean, it's really impressive.
Now, are doctors across the board, I mean, I know there's probably a whole range of response to this, but I would imagine from a doctor's standpoint, you could see so many more people, all over the place more efficiently this way. Do the doctors like that aspect of it?
I think some do and some don't. I think it's very, individualized.
Uh-huh. I would imagine though that just the sheer number of people that can be seen this way has got to be more than if they were seeing them in person. Is that not?
I don't know that the more is better. I think that the same way that within a responsible scope of practice, every doc has got a slightly different way of practicing medicine, and that's the art part of it. Telemedicine simply allows another facet of that for that particular doctor's delivery of care if it fits in their scope of practice and fits their level of comfort.
But like take the school example. If a doctor's available for a certain rural school, so the next time that somebody's sick, then it could be a totally different doctor. Like this is you have like kind of a stable of doctors that are serving that school?
Yes, potentially. And again, that's part of the legwork that goes in on the front end so that even if it is the child's, in this particular instance, not their primary care pediatrician that had seen them, that there is then a sharing of the clinical record and the notes are forwarded over so that there's a continuity of care between providers.
Right.
So, but I have to say, when you see a patient, just because it's by a different venue, it doesn't mean you're seeing the patient any less time. You still have to chart on the patient. The records still have to be sent to the right places. If you're doing an ultrasound, the scan still has to be
right. The
finished.
Work,
I mean,
is, the work still
the is still work. There.
Right.
You're just seeing a patient in a different way. So, everybody sees patients at a different speed, and how you chart and do that is very individualized. So I would say it's not that you see more, it's that you see them a little bit differently.
Right, but you're seeing them differently, but you're seeing a group of people who hadn't been seen.
Potentially that is very true, that would not have been seen or would
right.
have to have been seen, like in the school case, in an emergency room.
Or not have access to the specialty care, so perhaps seeing a general OBGYN versus having access
to a specialist.
To a specialist like Dr. Patterson.
And you're seeing, when it comes to time efficiency, now you have electronic medical records being being launched in a large way. So that sometimes puts more time in a physician when they're having to chart and notate on their different patients that they're seeing.
Mm-hmm.
You don't want to create more time. You don't want to take more time out of their time with a patient. You
right.
actually want to create more time with a patient.
Exactly.
So that's some of the maturing of the industry. That's some of the things that we've got to work on from a workflow standpoint, from a technology integration standpoint, and our software, hardware, peripheral device standpoint. We've got to become more patient user experience and physician user experience oriented, because we've been sitting in our garages, and now you get large industry people getting in,
right?
With some we were bungee cording things together a few years ago. Now it's very sophisticated. Big systems are coming on the grid. They're going at this in a very from hospital to home. They want to do a full virtual care spectrum, so they can be a part of the because of some of the changes in our healthcare, when patients are readmitted to hospitals, or even just treatment quality indicators on physicians. How mm-hmm. well are their patients? Not how many times they come see me. It's actually how I made a huge dent in a whole region of the state in relation to child mortality. That is a big quality indicator for Dr. Patterson. It will determine how she is reimbursed. So physicians are getting now, I think, or they're getting into that where these types of things really mean something,
right.
not only patient-wise, they can see their patients in the way they want to see them, but also from a, how do I keep doing this? How do I expand what I do? Because we're not making a lot of Dr. Patterson's to keep up with the
right.
with the demand. We're not. And we have to get better at this. We have to come up with new models. We can't stick to the way we used to do things.
Now, how this, everything you're saying so far is that the devices are in some sort of a medical environment, right? Like they're in a nurse's office or in a doctor's office or in the state health. It's not in my house.
It's getting there. It's coming.
If I have a chronic ailment, like say I have diabetes or mm-hmm. Heart issues.
It's there.
I can have this type of interaction and I can be the person that's doing the procedure so that the...
A couple different pieces there. So that, and let me back up kind of to the very beginning of our conversation where you asked what does telehealth mean?
Mm-hmm.
Telehealth, I would tell you, was a very broad term and encompasses both telemedicine, as it's commonly referred to, which is really the kind of in-person clinical care. There's also home health monitoring, which I think is what you're touching on right now, so that if you have a chronic condition, there are Bluetooth devices, wireless devices, where you can get your blood sugar levels, monitor your weight, have those different metrics sent back to whoever is in charge of your care with the appropriate alarms so that you can monitor and track those, and that the doctors that are managing your condition with you can intervene at an early stage. And that's not necessarily the face-to-face care that we were talking about earlier, but it is absolutely an adjunctive piece of the care to help folks manage those chronic conditions.
Because, like, if I have high blood pressure or I have some heart ailment and I'm able to somehow communicate whatever my heart issue is over the phone or by computer or Bluetooth or however, by some device to a doctor, and it hits a certain threshold and some alarm goes off at the doctor's office, they go, hey, you have to see someone, as opposed to, well, I get it seen every 90 days, so I hope it falls into that window of time.
Yeah, and you went into the emergency room three times within those 90 days.
Right.
So that's not efficient care. That's not going to create better outcomes for the patient.
But
at
so
all.
That technology to monitor me is already exists now.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, and to go across the spectrum with continuity, so that you go from say Dr. Patterson's, she was very focused in relation to her ultrasound equipment, some of her images, whether they're CTs, MRIs, or whatever, they're coming to her so she can do a proper diagnostic examination. If you start to extend into the home, say she has a patient with high blood pressure, you're starting to see physicians prescribing home health monitoring as a part of the regimen for moving forward. So I can monitor the blood pressure of my patient, and I have a nurse manager that's watching over, say, 300 patients. And then when they go from green to yellow to red, I can intervene earlier, and I can do some predictive maintenance and providing of care so that the patient has better outcomes. And it really is patient-facing. We're turning the model inside out. We're centering our healthcare around the patient, and that's important.
Well, and allowing patients to manage their health rather than coming in and interfacing with a healthcare system once they get sick or once there's an acute problem.
Yeah. Right. It's more holistic. It's not just an emergency-based medical system. It's a kind of you're proactively dealing with issues rather than reactively dealing with it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So now, before we wrap, I'd like to go around the room, and let's start with you, Turner. Your practice, your business, what are you up to, and what kind of person do you need in your business?
I am I'm the Vice President of Business Development for Telehealth Solutions. We are primarily a consultancy so that we help clinical practices select, optimize, workflow, really anything that needs to be done around telemedicine, whether they have existing systems that need to be updated and optimized, or kind of soup to nuts installation of a new system, everything from product selection through helping them with reimbursement, workflow, and technology assessment. So we kind of do it all.
So you do that for an individual physician or like for a hospital or for it could be a...
Both, either. So we focus one. Primarily on outpatient practices, prison systems, not as much on hospital systems, but we do that, and really anybody that needs the services and the expertise.
And if somebody wants to have a conversation with you, you have a website?
Absolutely. It's telehealthsolutions.com.
Great. And Matt, your company?
Yes, I work with Ironbow Technologies. Over the past several years, we launched the VA telemedicine network. So we monitor and maintain that network at a very large scale. We work with a lot of large health systems. We not only consult, but we also can implement, host, and do a variety of things on the technology integration side. We're integrators. We do sit on some of the technology side and helping with the user interface and getting feedback so that the technology becomes more streamlined, more oriented to the clinical side and to the patient adoption side as well. We have some, you know, we can work with various types of environments, both nationally and internationally. We have over 150 countries that we're in some capacity. We have a high level of security clearance with the government, some of our government-related contracts with the FBI, CIA, things like that, from an endpoint. So things are moving to the BYOD format in healthcare as well as in education and other things.
That's good job security for you, right?
Exactly. You know, it's one of those things where you go from pilot to production, you need to have those components in place to do it. So, yeah, you can find us online, ironbow.com, and we also have, you know, lots of different ways to get involved with us.
Dr. Patterson?
Well, I'm CEO of Women's Telehealth, and we are...
The rock star. She's a rock star, y'all.
We are now in our fourth year. We provide maternal fetal medicine to hospitals, to clinics, and to private practice, and we are licensed and providing care in 7 states.
And then, so you're bullish about all this, huh?
Very.
There's 43 more states to go.
That's right.
Oh, there's over 200 countries left to go. What are you talking about?
Well, thank you all for being part of the show today. It's an important subject, and there's a lot to, like you were saying, there's a whole world out there that we can be helping with this technology. This is Lee Cantor for Stone Peyton. We will see you all next time on Atlanta Business Radio.